Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
El Hombre is brought to you by LoanEstimateReview.com.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. You hear that music there? We've got 1 week in a row of a clean hang-up, Jim, and you weren't here to witness
yeah,
it.
Yeah, boy. I think we're going to get two in a row, though.
I think so. I think he's got his confidence back. He is El Hombre. Michael Bradley with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Hello, Michael.
I'm back, baby.
You're back. That's what
that
you...
That sounds like false bravado to me, but we'll see in 20
Come on.
Minutes. We'll see in 22
That's real
minutes.
Bravado.
Now... Michael, you sent me the picture, and I tweeted it out, the picture of the phone that you actually used for this segment.
A couple of things. Everybody made it sound like it's this dirty, grimy thing. The color of it is tan. It's not supposed to be a jet white thing that is, you know, aged and molded over the years. And I do wipe it every now and then with a Clorox white wipe or, you know, tissue or some water or whatever to keep it clean. It does the job.
Were you surprised it got that much attention? There were a lot.
I was astonished.
There were a lot of likes, a lot of comments.
I was just looking at it, thinking that Bob Stelton would probably have to spend a minimum of 15 minutes with wipe downs to use that.
Why is he a germaphobe?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. He wipes down. The other day he was stressed out for the show. He's like, "I've not had the proper wipe down time." You get the microphone, the keyboard, everything.
The mouse, the headsets.
That's crazy.
They get a wipe down every day, Michael.
And I got to be roommates with him in about a month. We're going to be in a small room.
Where are you going to be? At the
spring training.
Spring training, nice.
Yeah, sleeping on double beds or twin beds.
Together?
No, we're going to make them into bunk beds.
Yeah, we're going to go step brothers with it.
Oh, you
got to
do that. Yeah, that's great.
So much room for activities.
See, the thing is, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I eat like 9-day-old deli turkey, so my stomach is pretty bulletproof.
9-day-old deli turkey.
Sounds like you wouldn't want to share a room with you after that, though. That's what we're going to be doing,
Michael. Are you kidding me? I smell like daffodils at all times.
Yes, you do. Hey, what is your take? We played some sound yesterday on Jose Altuve's first introduction as he stepped up to the plate in a spring training game, of all things, and hearing just a chorus of boos. And, you know, I'm just laughing at some of the responses from these guys. Like, they're already tired of it. You know, you got them speaking out like it's enough already, all this. I'm thinking, enough? You've played one spring training game. It's going to get all – you better toughen up, Buttercup, because this is going to be a rough season.
You're exactly right. If he's complaining about it now, what's he going to do when he shows up in New York? What's he going to do when he shows up in Boston? What's he going to do when he shows up in real cities where real fans are and that they know how to boo and give you a hard time? Heck, they may even boo him in Cleveland if they, you know, they may boo him in Tampa Bay if they actually show up to the game. So I mean, this is going to be an all year thing. There's always going to be someone that's going to pay good money on StubHub to get close enough to the Astros dugout to yell at these guys all game. I may try to do a road trip to find them if they play when they play down in Baltimore to go down and yell at them.
Well, and for Altuve too, I don't know how you feel about him, Michael, but man, I just have always loved that guy. He never seems to be like pop off or be any kind of a villain at all. And to see him, I mean, he's going to get annoyed. And, you know, the other thing I'd say, you know, there should be an extra penalty for pitchers who plunk him because he's so hard to hit. I mean,
he got hit yesterday.
That's true.
If you hit Jose Altuve, you're really trying to. But no, I feel like we're going to see another side of him that we haven't seen from him because, you know, he's got to have a breaking point. And I wonder how far people are going to take this and if we're going to see a guy like that actually turn on the crowd and maybe other players.
He really has to walk a very, very careful line this year, because if he does lose his stuff and he goes off and starts complaining and really going, getting angry, he may never recover from this in the court of public opinion, because people are already saying, as you said, he was impossible to root against. You know, it's kind of like the guy in Rudy. You're 5 foot nothing. You're 100 and nothing. You know, he's playing great baseball despite all of these apparent physical limitations. Now all of a sudden he's being excoriated, rightly, for cheating and wearing who knows what underneath his his shirt and his jersey, and after one preseason game, he's going to come up and say, it's not right that I get booed. If he lashes out, this is going to be bad for him.
All right, Michael, what if Rob Manfred came up to you and said, hey, Michael Bradley, what in the world should I do at this point? It's just a complete fiasco, this whole Astros thing. What's the best way you should handle it?
Resign. right now, if he were to take away the trophy, I think that he might get sued by Jim Crane. I think that the fact that they didn't anticipate, he's in a completely untenable situation. I don't know what can be done, to be honest. He cut a deal with the players and the Players Association. First thing I would do is I would call Tony Clark, and I'd say, look, all your players kept their mouths shut while this was going on, and they knew it was going on. Now they're opening their mouths and popping off. Shut up. We cut the deal with you. Shut your people up. No more comments about this. If somebody asks them, the line is, you know what? I've said my piece, or other people have spoken out about this. I just want to talk about the 2020 season. That's one thing he can control. He needs to get the players to stop lashing out at Houston, because the deal was made to protect the players. And look, we have reports, the Wall Street Journal report that said that Washington was going to other teams, and saying, what do they do? What should we do? Everybody knew about it. Nobody said anything. So stop popping off. That's one way to control some of this stuff. After that, he's just going to have to let it ride out. He made a bad decision. He handled it poorly. Deal with it.
Yeah, and I was reading a quote as you were talking there from Ron Gardenhire. He said there's frustration in the fan base, and they have a right to voice their opinion. The Astros are just going to have to wear it for a while, and eventually it'll move on. But fans are going to voice their opinions, and they have a right to, which I completely agree with. But what do you make of, like, Carlos Correa came out, I think, what, about a week ago and said, yeah, Altuve didn't really have anything. He wasn't participating in this. And I'm thinking, Dave loves when I say this, they're all complicit. They're all part of it. You knew what was going on, whether he used it or not. You're all part of it, everybody in that clubhouse.
They were banging a trash can. All right? You cannot make an argument at all that people didn't know, because A, they heard the trash can. B, if they didn't ask about the trash can, then they're nincompoops. It's like, what is the matter with you? So anybody from Houston that says dumb things, then the fans should get even more angry with them. But Gardenhire's right. Eventually, something else is going to happen. People are going to be paying attention to different things, whether it's in baseball, whether it's the NFL draft, whether it's March Madness, whether it's it's the NBA Finals. People are going to stop paying attention to this one storyline. They're going to have to make their run through the entire American League and whatever National League towns they go to. They're going to have to take the heat. They're going to have to deal with it, and they're going to have to move on. And that's the only way for this thing to go away for the Astros.
Hey, Michael, I know we've talked a little bit about this, but let's say that you're DeMaurice Smith or DeMaurice Smith and head of the NFL Players Association. What would be a couple of things that you notice that they are not pulling for or bargaining for that they should be, or what's just been overall what stood out to you in this little – as we start to see some of the details come out in this negotiation?
Look, the owners want their 17th game, and they want their extended playoffs, and they're going to get it, okay? If they have to lock them out, they're going to lock them out, but they're going to get it. So if I'm Smith, I'm saying, look, we want more money. We want extra roster spots. If you're not going to give us a 54th player, then give us an extra man on the practice squad or two. I would say go and negotiate with the XFL and make it a farm system so that there are jobs that pay better, and that there's some security that guys who aren't making major league or NFL rosters are going to be having some jobs and chances to move up. It all comes down to the fact that the average NFL player's career is about 3 to 3.5 years. Extending the money that they can make during that time and extending the opportunities are about the only things that are worth fighting for. because, as I said, the owners are going to get what they want. They always do in football.
Do you think that the 4 years for the rookie in minimum is that, to me, because you just mentioned 3.5 years is the average lifespan of a player, and you know, and they have this 4-year restriction, and I feel like nobody's ever going to get that, you know, taken off, because it's a bunch of veterans that are running the Players Association, so they're not really that interested in that. But it just seems like make it a year, or you know, even two,
what, before free agency,
shorter. Yeah, you know how they
no. You can't do that. And look, if the average career is 3 to 3.5 years, those guys aren't going to make the majority of, you know, half the people aren't going to make free agency anyway. You can't have people just coming to these teams for 2 years and then being able to move on. There has to be some sort of ability for team to control its roster, simply because the fans will start to say, who are these guys? Every year we have a turnover of 20 players, 25 players on every roster. Be one of the things I read today, the Indianapolis Colts, because Anthony Costanzo's coming back to play tackle, they're going to have all five of their offensive linemen back.
Mm-hmm.
That's unheard of. And it was a good offensive line. Fans like that kind of stuff. So you need to be able to control them for 4 years. I don't think free agency is the answer. Free agency is the answer in Major League Baseball. I think that's what the next big thing with the labor agreement is going to be, trying to get service time cut down before players can become free agents. But in the NFL, you can't take it down much more, because if you do, then there's going to be such turnover that the fans might lose some of that giant pot of revenue that the fans keep paying into, because they won't recognize their teams.
Yeah, that's a good point. What about guys like Jim Brown walking around and shuffling around? I just feel like either the Players Association should have carved out more for those kinds of guys, or the NFL, we've talked about it, would be, such as Bob put it, an act of goodwill for them to say, hey, we're going to come in and take care of some of these guys that played, you know, back in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, when they were fighting for things like free agency.
Yeah, I think universal health care for the players. And it should be retroactive. I mean, if you played for the Decatur Staleys, you get health care. And it should include long-term care. It would not be that expensive in the grand scheme of a league that is bringing in $10 to $15 billion a year in revenues. Okay? So put together the plan that if you play a certain number of years, you play those 3 years, you qualify for the health care. Your pension's not going to be gigantic, but you're going to qualify for the health care, and then and long-term care, in-home care, memory care, the whole nine, because these guys give their bodies to this sport so that these guys, you know, make money. This, I think today was the anniversary of False Face buying the Dallas Cowboys for $170 million and change. It's now worth $5.5 billion, okay?
Wow.
So that is astounding. And there's a certain person who lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue who ridiculed Jones for paying that much money when he bought the team. It looked like it was a pretty good investment to me. So these owners continue to profit obscenely from their holding of these teams. There's no reason why the players shouldn't be able to not have to worry about the fact that they're, you know, where am I going to be able to pay for my prescription drugs? Am I going to be able to pay for my dementia care?
Yeah, it would go such a long ways and not cost them that much. I just saw a thing on Drew Bledsoe the other day, which is kind of a sad story. I mean, the guy gets, you know, aced out by Tom Brady. But it was about the time when Kraft came in, and I think it was $172 million that he paid.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the Patriots worth? $4 billion, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's and the funny thing about it is, these guys, you know, with a few exceptions, I think the Bidwell family out in the desert, those guys, NFL football is their business. You know, Arthur Blank owns Home Depot. The Bidwells own the Cardinals. The Bengals, they're not owned by a family that has made its fortune elsewhere. But for the most part, these are people that have money other than this.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things that they do.
Right.
One of the piles of gold that they sit upon, as you know, when they choose to. So there's a whole lot of money out there, and it's just, I mean, go to an NFL game as a fan and look at the commerce. It is astounding to me, the money that is being made every single game by these teams.
Hey, Michael, you mentioned the XFL. Have you seen anything in the new league that you think that maybe the NFL should adopt?
Well, the one thing that seems to be pretty clear to me is that they don't see that the league has gotten the officiating right. You're not hearing great outcry about anything from the XFL, but they've been able to streamline, I think, the officiating well. I'm still trying to figure out whether the kickoff is worth, you know, investigating. It's a good idea. I think it's not very exciting, but most kickoffs are not very exciting. It's like, okay, where between the 15 and the 30 is this team going to get the ball? Okay, the 23. Okay, the 27. Okay, the 19. So I think that something, you know, that's a good start on ideas for the kickoff. I still haven't figured out the 1-2 and the 3-point, whether I like it. I like the fact that the extra point is now no guarantee and that you can go for two if you want. I think that doesn't need to be fixed. I just love P.J. Walker of them Houston Roughnecks.
Is this a league, and I know we're, 3 weeks into it, but do you have a sense that this has got legs that it can carry on for a few seasons or maybe even longer, or do you feel like, it might be a...
It's way too early. It's way too early to tell.
Okay.
You know, the good thing they have is Fox and ESPN as their television propaganda partners because they will really pump it up. That adds legitimacy. And again, I said this, I think, a couple weeks ago. When you turn on the game, it looks like a real football game. It doesn't look like, oh, this is just a bunch of guys getting together hoping that some NFL team sees them and invites them to camp. This looks like a real professional league. So I think that is what it has going for it. What it has to be careful is not to expand too quickly. Don't go from 8 to 12 to 16 to 20 in three seasons. Don't do it because that's where you get burned. Really vet the markets. Really check out the temperature. I mean, don't bring a team to Philadelphia. Just don't do it. It will die on the vine quickly.
Why you say that?
What? We don't care about anything but the Eagles, the Phillies, and sometimes the Sixers and Flyers.
Yeah.
Okay? College sports here is not big. College basketball is good. I mean, Villanova gets a lot of people out to the games, mm-hmm. and occasionally a game between one of the other Big Five teams will draw a lot. But Philadelphia, for pro football, is the Eagles, oh, and yes, the Eagles. Don't try to bring me the Philadelphia Bell back or the Philadelphia, what was the team in the USFL? This is bad because I used to go to games. The Philadelphia Stars. Think about this. The Philadelphia Stars were really good. William Fuller, NFL. Sam Mills, NFL, should be in the Hall of Fame. Kelvin Bryant, hell of a player. They had Chuck Comiskey played in the NFL for the Saints as offensive guard for a lot of years. I think their center play. They had like 7, 8, maybe 10 players who played in the NFL, and people still wouldn't come out to see them. So, you know, just be careful.
Yeah, you know what? Bob and I have been against the kickoff. I think we're in the minority as far as how it's structured, the guys standing 5 yards apart from each other.
I don't like it.
But actually, the battle hacks, hey, that'll be when they start going down the tube. Actually, they're a good team. But the St. Louis Battlehawks, they ran like a little reverse off of it and ended up getting a touchdown. I thought that was really cool. And so that could be something. The other thing I really liked was the officials talking through how they were making the calls. I think if most, you know, NFL fans were able to at least hear that, it would make a little bit more sense because it just seems so arbitrary when the call comes.
Yeah, but you know what though? There's less at stake, and people aren't gambling on this stuff so much. And all it would take is someone to misspeak, or someone to say something just a little bit wrong, and then it would be a huge outcry. Nobody, you know, you don't have a lot of people rebroadcasting the conversations in the XFL games between officials. You would have every sports talk radio show in the country if somebody was saying something or they talked through it and they got to one conclusion, then somebody said, well, I don't know about that, and they changed it or whatever. It's not scripted. It's way too dangerous for the league. I think it's fun for the XFL, but it would open the door to real problems for the NFL.
Well, I don't care about the NFL. I care about our sports talk show host, you know, show here.
And, well, yeah, I mean, it would be fodder for you guys, that's for sure. You know, it's sort of like this whole thing with the Major League Baseball. Manfred gave everybody a gift.
Yes, he did.
By screwing this up.
We appreciate every moment of his ineffective nature.
He's a very generous man.
Hey, Michael, Russell Wilson has a mental conditioning coach, and he doesn't want the quarterback here to be listening to country music. He says country music is great, but it's so negative that we don't want to have that really dictating our internal ad campaign. That doesn't mean you can't listen to it, but if you're going through a divorce or a tough challenge and you're listening to sad music, you're going to be influenced negatively. What do you think? You think Carson Wentz should maybe stop listening to country music and might help him too?
Well, you know what happens when you play a country music song backwards, right?
Yeah. Oh, your dog comes home.
Dog back. You get your girl back. Yeah. A lot of this country, this big hat country, is real popular, real positive stuff. Singing about love. If you're thinking, listen to Merle Haggard. Yeah. You know, if you're listening to Jordan Osho Jones and Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and those fellas, the Outlaws, yeah, you're going to hear some sad stuff. Kris Kristofferson, God, no, don't listen to Johnny Cash. There ain't no good chain gang. You know, so let's make sure that they're staying away from that. But you can listen to some old Luke Bryan and some Kenny Cheesy and those guys. You can listen to them. They're singing some uplifting stuff about family and love and country and all that.
Yeah, I was just thinking, if that's my mental conditioning coach, I want a new one. I'm not even like some big country music fan either, but I just think that's a bunch of hooey.
Hell, I listen to Black Sabbath and feel good.
There you go.
Hey, really quick, I've been flushed from the bathroom of your heart. That's
there
a
you
a
go.
Line.
I like that one.
You're the reason exactly. Our kids are ugly, little darling. I mean, these are country western lyrics, man. I mean,
you've been away for 14 days, but it seems more like 2 weeks. I just made that one up.
That's good.
You could write country songs.
Thank you very much.
He's got a future. Michael, good stuff, man. Good to talk to you, as always. We'll do it again. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter, at Daily Ombre.
He seems nervous.
Hey, how are things going right with the Labor Day visit?
Say that again.
Oh, are you coming out for the Michigan game?
I thought that you were gonna fly me out and put me up at the Four Seasons, and we're gonna have they're gonna get the key to the city, and then we're gonna go to the game.
it's a work in progress. Still talking.
Jim will pick you up in his 30-year-old car that has 300,000 miles on it.
I'll get picked up in a Yugo. I'll stay right next to the train station again, and get no sleep. How often does the train come by? So often you won't even notice.
Won't notice it. That's right.
We're working on it, man. I'll keep you up to speed.
Cool.
We'll do it again next week.
So long, suckers.
El Hombre is brought to you by
Estimate.
Well, the music was a little bit too soon there. I'm not sure.
No,
that was a swish.
No, he nailed that one.
That was cleaner than last week.
Yeah.
He's on a roll. He's back in a big, big way. All right, good stuff from him. Coming up, we're going to break down Joel Corey's comments from yesterday about what it might take to keep Jadeveon Clowney and see if we can sway Jim to this way of thinking. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder that you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. Just download that thing. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can do it for free. It's magic. And all the cool kids are doing it. We talked to Joel Corey yesterday about the CBA, different things like that. And
Former agent, NFL Network, is he? Or is it NFL.com?
I think it's NFL.com.
Both, neither.
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah. He's known.
CBSSports.com.
CBS Sports. All right, we were both wrong.
Yeah, neither.
But we were talking to him about that, and then we got into specifics about, you know, somebody like Clowney and what it's going to take to bring him back to Seattle. Here's what he had to say about that.
He hasn't lived up to being the first overall pick, even though he's been a very good player, and he should be commended for not shutting it down last year when he could have and worried about free agency because of the core injury, because that did affect how he played. But what you paid Frank Clark, he's probably going to want more. What you didn't want to pay Frank Clark, I should say, he's probably going to want more than that. And if I'm a team, the Seahawks, I don't want to go that high. I really don't want to go any higher than Trey Flowers, which is like $18 million a year. But Trey Flowers had a very player-friendly structure. I wouldn't want to do that. And Seattle typically doesn't guarantee the second year of a salary at signing, but has an earlier vesting date than most teams.
So there he is saying what it would probably take to bring him back, but then he talked about, you know, the other...
Well, he's talking about the Trey Flowers who plays for Detroit.
Yeah, not to be confused with the Trey Flowers that plays cornerback here. He's not making anywhere close to $18 million yet. But he talked about the other pass rushers that are presumably going to be available, many of which will be franchise tag, in his opinion.
Well, pass rushers are going to be in high demand because most of the best ones aren't going to be available. What I'm curious to see is the Dante Fowler, who finally had close to the year you've been expecting for him being a high pick, is going to get franchised or not. Matthew Judon will get franchised. Ngui, Jaguars will get franchised, which only helps Clowney in terms of his demand, particularly if Fowler is franchised, then he's really going to be the best guy out there.
He was going for Ngakoue, right?
Unique Ngakoue. Let's get it right, everybody.
Ngui, I like
Ngui,
that.
I like that one, yeah. Today, I think the professor had, of course, he has Yannick.
Yeah.
It's not. But anyway, he makes a great point there. I mean, if all of a sudden that market starts to shrink up because, you know, you look, I don't know what the Rams are going to do with Fowler, but I just know that pass rush is a huge priority.
Well, and
pretty much everybody except for the 49ers. They have it.
Where are you at with Jim? Jim's of the mind, let's move on from Clowney, spend that money on two guys, which in theory, I agree with him. I like that. Problem is, who are those two guys? I don't feel like there are two guys out there to spend that money on that are going to have the impact you'd want. Everybody keeps pointing to Green Bay and the linebackers there, and hey, look what they did. That's great. Those guys were available.
Yeah,
I don't feel like they're available now.
And I don't think either of those guys, anybody expected them to have the year that they had. So, especially the other Smith, not Zadarius, because he was pretty good. The other one is at Preston, you know. So, yeah, together, but just because that happened last year, I don't think it's not going to happen again necessarily.
Yeah, like, we'll just do that.
Yeah, we'll just go with that program and just get the exact. Look, I think Clowney, I mean, he's the one that you want. He's here. He wants to be here. He's dedicated. Somebody said, was it maybe El Hombre just now, about that he didn't shut it down at the end of the year as far as, you know, free agency. Clowney didn't, and he's dedicated to playing hard. But he's just incredibly disruptive. When you look at, you know, I just, every time I go back, let's say I'm going back to look at L.J. Collier, I'm going back to look at Trey Flowers, whatever, he shows up, and he's either knocking a pass down or he's playing the run, or he just flashes, man. It's like all of a sudden you see these long arms and legs, and that bothers quarterbacks, and it bothers offensive linemen. And, you know, you can see a lot of times he's getting a ridiculous amount of penetration. And just because he hasn't gotten those sacks in the past, he has every tool that there is to get them. So I would be surprised if they didn't get him in a place where he's happy and, you know, playing in the right defense that he wants. And they pay him whatever it's going to take. There's nobody like him out there. So I don't know where you go unless you get lucky. Or you trade up and get this Chase Young kid from Ohio State who might be the best defensive end in years.
What could you possibly have to get to number two? Because that's presumably where you'd have to go.
Yeah.
Right? From
you'd have to make a trade like Ditka made.
Yeah, here's my entire draft.
Take everything we've got. Oh, and you want a player off the roster for us to go to number two? Yeah, that's a virtual impossibility.
Yeah, and then that guy gets hurt. You know, you draft him and he gets hurt.
Or you never know. Maybe he's a bust. You don't. He looks like an absolute certainty, but you never know. But, Jim, what do you think of that? I mean,
I understand. You know, after listening to Corey yesterday and then just seeing what's out there, the guys that are going to be franchised, like you're talking about, Ngakoue, Shaq Barrett,
Judon
from Tampa Bay, Matthew Judon. But I still, I can see the point there. Maybe if you just got one of those good pass rushers and you brought him in here, then maybe you'd get the best of Clowney. You'd get better numbers anyway.
And you still need to bring somebody in.
I'm with everybody else. I saw what he did. He was disruptive, and boy, he's good against the run, and he had a lot of hurries, and he was in the quarterback's face a lot. But I still come back to going, but he had three sacks. And I just can't see, if it goes up to 22 or 23 million, are you really going to pay that much for Clowney on the hope that. And his high watermark in Houston was 9.5 sacks, so it's not like it's ever going to be double digits at this point. So I still would like to see him maybe. I mean, there's guys out there. There's Armstead from San Francisco. Eric Armstead played at Oregon. You got Fowler with the Rams, Michael Brockers. Heard Brock this morning talk. I don't really like this idea from Brock, but he seems to think it's a good idea. Bringing in Jason Pierre-Paul, perhaps. So, I mean, there are some names out there, nobody that's going to really dazzle you. And we talked again about Michael Bennett being out there. So
That's a duct tape move.
I know. I don't know if you'd go as high as 22 or 23 million for Clowney, though, would you? I mean, did you like him that much? Look at the defense overall. The defense wasn't good, and he played 14 of the 16 games.
Yeah, but he was physically compromised in a handful of
those
games.
Well, he wasn't compromised early in the season, though.
No. As you point out, he's never been a double-digit sack guy. But if he can give you 9 sacks, and how many forced fumbles did he have this year? 3 or 4?
Yeah.
You know, he had the pick six, he scored a couple touchdowns. I mean, he accumulated a lot with that one category being sacks, not impressive. But as Dave has pointed out and shown me moments on film of what he's doing and the attention he's drawing, if he's not getting it done, perhaps he's opening the door for an LJ Collier. He's opening the door for Rasheem Green, or if they bring it, because I think they need
a better move would be to change defensive coordinators than to bring Clowney back, in my opinion. But you know, that doesn't seem like that's going to be happening.
But you got to find the pieces somewhere, and he is one of the pieces, in my opinion. But even bringing him back, you're not done, because as you point out, they weren't good with him. You've got to have somebody else chipping in, whether you think Jaron Reed's going to be that guy and you bring him back and he's going to have a bounce back year, or you bring in Fowler. There's got to be Clowney end. It can't be just, hey, we got Clowney back, we feel good about our defense. Really? Why?
Well, so there's this assumption that you're going to be worse without Clowney. I don't necessarily buy into that. Because the two games, just a small sample size, but the two games they played without him, they had 5 sacks at Philadelphia. They gave up fewer points in those two games than on the average in the other 14.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but I just...
Yeah, it does.
I say a lot of ridiculous stuff. But if you looked at Clowney and you said 16 to 18 million, okay, sign me up for that. But I don't know if you go as high as Khalil Mack or even, you know, between Frank Clark and Khalil Mack. Do you really go 22 million? Do you match whatever he gets from another team and give him, say, hey, you know, come back to Seattle and we'll match whatever you get out there? I wouldn't go that high with him.
By the end of his contract, pass rushers of his caliber are going to be getting $30 million.
Yeah, the cap's going up every year.
Yeah.
The prices for quarterback. I mean,
you know what you got. You know that he fits here. You know he works out. Any of these other you hope that they're professionals, and if they're that good, if Dante Fowler's that good, he's going to play the same way here as he did there. But, you know, there's always that question of whether or not that works out. You know that he's going to play well inside of this scheme. And, again, I just saw so many times that the ball was just coming out right now. I mean, there was no chance to get there. So, you know, I don't know about firing the defensive coordinator, but I feel like they do need to play a little bit more aggressive style of defense that they're used to playing, and that'll give him a chance to get there and maybe get the double-digit sacks.
All right, coming up, we're going to find out what we learned today, because coming up at the top of the hour, what do we have, the Cactus League report? That's happening tonight, so we'll be out of here early. So what we learned coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we learned today. Maura, what did we learn?
We learned that Jim is all of a sudden cocky about the Kooks.
I love you, Coach Hopkins.
I haven't lost his enthusiasm.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be a one-game winning streak. The Cougs are coming to town on Friday. Isaac Bonton is going to be back in the lineup. We're a completely different team with Bonton out there.
Who's cocky and about the Cougs all of a sudden?
The Cougs are going to sweep.
Of course he is.
Dave and I have been talking you off the ledge all year.
Hey, can I ask you something? Do I interrupt you when you're talking?
Yes, you do often.
No, not very often.
Yeah, often.
I think that's kind of rude. Yes.
I don't think anybody's ever gotten in trouble for being rude on this show, have they?
No, remember that,
so
Dave?
So indignant.
Dave, we were told that good sports talk radio is to interrupt other people. And yeah. But you and I have never bought into that. I
tried not to.
No.
Who told you that?
Mike Salk told me that.
Really?
One yeah. Yeah. He did. Yeah. To answer your question.
A couple times I went on the morning show with him, and he would interrupt me. And then I would go, but anyways, back to what I was saying
before I was rudely interrupted.
Yeah.
You're cocky about the Cougs now. All of a sudden, you've got
Cougs.
All this confidence.
Yeah. I'm just picturing myself going to the game because I'm going to go Friday with my kids, and I'd like to walk out of Heckhead happy.
I think you've got a good chance of being happy that night.
See, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What else did we learn?
Thanks, Dave.
It's a crazy thought.
We got some clarification from El Hombre about some misconceptions that he felt were out there involving his phone.
The color of it is tan. It's not supposed to be a jet white thing that is, you know, aged and molded over the years. And I do wipe it every now and then with a Clorox white wipe or, you know, tissue or some water or whatever to keep it clean. It does the job.
Were you surprised it got that much attention? There were a lot.
I was astonished.
There were a lot of. I tweeted out that picture, and there were a ton of likes and comments about it, and people.
Here's the funny thing about that whole thing is that he didn't know that Bob was a germaphobe.
Yeah,
yeah.
How did
you
not
buddies.
Know? How long?
We just haven't been in each other's company that often over the years. I mean, I've known him since 2002.
Well, and he's wrong about it because there was a lot of crud on that phone there.
Yeah, you can.
I'm just from Bob's standards. Do you know how nervous I am having to be in Bob's room? I'm going to find out that I am indeed the biggest pig in the world.
Hey, but I was surprised to find out when Danny O'Neill tattled on Paul yesterday and tweeted out a photo of his unmade bed. Bob said he's okay with that.
Yeah. Bob doesn't make his bed.
Once a week I make my bed when I change the sheets.
Why only once a week?
Because that's when I change the sheets.
Oh, yeah, you answered that, didn't you, before I even asked the question. But you just seem like a guy that would do your bed, make your bed every day, and get the wrinkles out of it. And...
I live alone, though. I think if there were another person I live with, I would be more cognizant of that. But I don't care. I'm going to get right back into sleeping it that night.
I told you guys this. There's a Navy SEAL or this guy that gave he addressed the graduating class at University of Texas. And he was talking about 10 things that lead to success. Number one, make your bed.
I
can't
hear
remember
that.
All
number
the
one.
Points. Yeah.
I got to hear that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's food for thought.
Yeah, I could have had a whole different life had I been making my bed this whole time.
Dave, do you feel like Shannon makes the bed better than you do? Because every time I make it, it never looks quite as good as it does when Kathy does it.
Never get it done. And there's just too many damn pillows.
Yeah.
That don't serve any purpose whatsoever.
They're decorative. Looking nice.
Yeah, and if you ever were to lay on some of those pillows, like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm using a pillow. Why?
It's not to be laid upon.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right.
Do you make your bed, Maura?
No. I was telling you this yesterday when I did when I lived with someone.
Right.
Because, yeah, I just felt like it was more courtesy to make sure it's all. Plus, I don't know. I think maybe you pull on the blankets more when you're sharing a bed with someone. Yeah. They get a little more. But, no, mine stays pretty neat. I just, I'll maybe shift it around before I get in at night if some of the blankets have moved. But I don't make it every day.
Yeah. There we go.
Sorry, Danny.
What else did we learn?
We learned what an Australian hillbilly is called.
Turns out he's an Australian hillbilly.
Australian hillbilly.
Is that Bogan?
Bogan.
Is that what he calls himself?
Yeah. He sent me a video of him and his beautiful wife and their small child at some monster truck rally. And, like, there's trucks out there breathing fire and whatnot. And then he's very proudly there, and his wife has this look like, yeah, well, I guess I signed up for this when I married him.
He said he was doing all those Bogan-y things.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
It was just very funny to me to see his. I mean, they're a superstar couple. You know, they both look like models. What are you getting nervous, Bob? You afraid you're not going to hit the mark here?
We got to send it out. We got stuff to do.
You might blow it.
No, I won't.
Come on, this is Misfit
like,
Radio. Come on,
like El Hombre's hang up.
You're going to blow
thanks
it.
Thanks to our guests today, Ryan Roland Smith, John Clayton, and El Hombre. You can find all of that at 710sports.com.
You're not that polished. You're going to blow it.
Jim, I got 12 seconds left. I got the podcast page there for you. Just click on our picture. It's right there for you. Coming up next is the Mariners Cactus League report and an airing of today's Mariners game on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You didn't blow it.